Session number 13717, Lieutenant Colonel Charles G, Reel 8.
Colonel G, Reel 8. Now, we were talking about early in 1918, your battalion was sent as a pioneer battalion to the 62nd Division. How did you feel about... There's two points to that. One is you were sent from the 50th Division, which was your native...
We were very proud of it, yes.
And also from 151 Brigade, which was the Durham Brigade, and you were sent from that to the 62nd Division, which was...
West York something.
How did you feel? And there you were to be the Pioneer Battalion, which is completely different.
Under division, and we felt we'd be disgraced a bit, and we'd lost our colonel too. And we knew it was a phony division.
Why did you know? How did you know that before you went there?
John Bull Division, we heard about it at the Arras Offensive.
Why was it called the John Bull Division?
Found in Ireland by the paper called John Bull. And it wasn't very well trained, we reckoned.
And what was the news of it in the Arras? What had you heard on the grapevine?
It had botched what it had to do.
But it had done... But Bradford's brigade had done well later on, you know?
Yes, very well. In attack.
So they weren't bad troops, it was just they may have been bad...
They'd badly trained, I think.
So you joined. You still had Crouch as your colonel.
Yes.
At and how did you fit into the division? Where were they when you
fairly joined? Somewhere back near Arras again. We went in red buses. Weren't much used in the war. It had been used more, I think. Nothing much was different except that fairly early on, Crouch was very cross with me, and rightly, because. Moving into a village, we suddenly had to move out again, or move a company out, and I hadn't the runner that knew exactly where they were. But in fact, we were there such a short time that it would have been almost impossible to. But then I did learn that lesson. I used it in the next war, because the adjutant and people used to go off and just sleep where they liked. And we were nearly always moving back, but I knew where they all were. That didn't happen again.
Did you have any responsibility for billeting when you went into a village? Would you help?
No, we sent the intelligence officer on who did the whole thing.
Now, did Crouch have any different working methods from Bradford?
No, I don't think so. Just carried on quietly. And
do you think he tried to emulate Bradford?
No, not in... He liked what he did say, but he... quickly, is we will have more fighting to do this year than we've ever had before. We have got to train. He said it so often, and we had to lie like
troopers. Did he say why he felt like that?
Well, Russia was out of the war. I mean, it really was obvious. I think he felt that we were in a division we didn't know. And we'd be expected to fight, and he was right. I don't think the divisional commander would have agreed then.
So, were his training methods any different from?
No, we just trained as best we could by lying steadily about the amount of other work we had to do, which was things like putting up barbed wire and digging trenches and so on.
That's the proper job of the pioneers.
Yes.
So you tried to avoid that with training for battle.
We said we'd done more than we had. And we watched out for CRE coming round. He naturally wanted to do as much of what he was told to get done. And of course a lot of it was a bit futile, but some of it wasn't futile. One day we put up 9 complete proper strands with slits in them, right across the front of Corps headquarters. And so no one's ever got to Corps, that Corps, for 20. Only a yard or two away they were. And there was a lot of work to do of that nature, because they knew the Germans were going to attack. They thought it would be April. It was March.
So you were doing this pioneer work and training in the Arras.
Trying to train, but not being able to much. And company commanders were not as good as they had been. And they were
there. In what way?
Well, they wouldn't know much about training or the building. I don't think any left suddenly. We had virtually no casualties with officers at Ypres, I think. So we ought to be all right. But I think the caliber of officers went steadily, fairly rapidly down in the war.
And why was that? Just casualties?
Casualties and... there were a lot of casualties early on in 18, you see. We didn't have many.
So you were on this role, and you did that right up to the opening of the German offensive in March?
Well, I was on leave for that. Colonel said, be on leave. I was getting on very well with him then. He said, be on leave. And then while I was on leave, he went on leave and sent the quartermaster on leave, which was really a mistake. Because everybody that knew anything about connections was on leave. Second in command was a fairly elderly man, either good fortune in the World War, nice person. But
do you remember his name?
No, I can't remember his name. Nobody would pick him as a soldier. He tried very hard. And when I was on leave...
We'll just look at that. What would you do on leave? Do you remember much about your leave?
Well, I went home and my father just got married again, so I went back to London. I think I was the best man or something silly. And went back to London, where a lot of arts. And this is March. I got back to France about one day after the Germans had broken through. And of course, there was chaos. There were no beds in Boulogne or anything, no trains for a bit. And everything living between, from there to the front line had been eaten. The Fifth Army had disappeared. And I had a job to get back to the unit near Arras, country I knew fairly well. And they'd had a few casualties. The acting adjutant got wounded. They put in somebody for the VC, I think, but I think he got it. But they were just on the edge of the fighting.
So the fact that you'd all been away hadn't mattered too much?
Hadn't mattered too much.
You were lucky.
Except for two dozen revolvers, whatever it was, a dozen revolvers had gone and all the men's blankets and all sorts of things like that. But the band had survived somehow, and most of the officers and people had survived. And the casualties were very bad. Then we went on pioneering.
Did you ever, during any of this, have any close escapes yourself from shell, you know, casual
shell? Not so far.
So
I don't think, not so far. Except that time I was running about for the attack on Charity.
So you were on the edge of the first German attack, you know, and got back. Situation.
The big one in the end of March. And then we were at peace. We ourselves were at peace. We were expecting a really big attack against us. Came in every day in the notes, 60 divisions. We were in Fonker Villas as pioneers. I enjoyed it so much.
Why did you enjoy it so much?
Well, it had been abandoned by the Germans, and the French had gone back and put up some houses and done a bit of gardening and so on. But whether we had to, our orders were, if there was an attack, we had to hold Fonker Villas.
Could you explain where it is in relation to it?
Well, it's fairly, not very far from where I'd been earlier, near Arras. I've lost my map for the moment somewhere.
They can look it up.
It didn't take more than about a day to decide where we'd have trenches and to defend Rockefellers. I personally was a bit scared the next few days, a big attack coming, and you've got to fight to the death, and the front line is somewhere away. And we went out of shell range, and everybody was terribly happy there. Lovely weather, and I used to walk around picking strawberries and raspberries and things in the gardens. And we had, I think it was 2,000 rations stored away in case we were surrounded. We ate them all. But later, but I've lived a fairly quiet life, sir. I've very little work to do in the ordinary room. Wander around in the weather, and I collected enough hay or something to carry it, connected to that cooking things and chimneys, etc., to set up a thing the whole battalion bathed at in the open air, somewhere in the village. And of course, we lived below ground. Headquarters was below a farmhouse. And the REs came and filled the farmhouse on us. They made a mess of it, so they had to pick it all up and put it on top of us. We felt quite safe. And a blanket to stop the gas getting in. And the company below the church. And the company commander there had got an MC in the Shariti raid. Not that he'd done anything, but it was a successful raid, and he'd been company commander for some time. He'd been my company commander. He'd also got an MBE or something for picking up a grenade and throwing it away. Somebody dropped a live one. I gathered from the, something was on the Court of Inquiry, that he was jolly lucky to get it because it was his fault. He wasn't fake. In any case, the colonel had a row with him and sent him home. He wouldn't take orders from the colonel somehow. And
Crouch.
He sent home with an MC and an MPE. That's inefficient. I think he'd run out of steam and run out of...
While you're at Funkervillers, how many of the rather more unusual customs of Bradford that they introduced survived? I'm thinking of the nude sunbathing. We didn't talk much about that, actually.
No, I don't think it, I don't know where it went on. I think they would... have an hour off and pick lice out of their shirts and things.
But there was none of this idea of them taking their clothes off and sitting in the sun.
I don't think so.
So as far as you know, that's going back to Bradford. Yeah. I think you mentioned this before. That had never really happened as far as you were concerned.
Not as thoroughly as...
But certainly you'd never done it.
It was known as a snapping parade, because you snapped lice. And they didn't do it in public in the village. But whether they did it from the village, I don't know. I think they...
But that's... What about the singing of Abide With Me and things like that? Would the battalion carry on doing that?
They would do that, I think, yes. Because that had become a real habit. I suspect that only just started when the band came. And I suspect that the band came not much before I came. Because it was so keen about keeping them out of trouble. Out of anywhere where they could get hurt. Because he somehow, rather illegally... got a band, a complete band, and it would make a muck of it if somebody was missing, and he more or less guaranteed that they wouldn't be if he could have avoided.
So some of the traditions carried on that he'd started.
Well,
right,
that one would carry on, and that's the only one he'd started, I think, except he must have made a bad battalion into a good one. And we tried to keep it up, but we...
Why did you think it had been bad before he got there?
Well, I think it was a poor one before the war. Didn't know what to...
The ninth was generally regarded before the war as not so hot.
Yes. Well, we'll get to that soon.
Now, you were at Funkervillers, and you'd been warned about the German attack. You were quite happy there, but worried.
Well, I forgot about the worry after a few days. Everybody was happy. And then we suddenly were told to go to one village away to rest. We hadn't done anything but rest, in one sense. And we moved out, it was a bit funny. And while we were out, 1,300 were killed by gas in the village. Had killed. Everybody had gas masks. And I never understood it. Known to this day.
Except another battalion or two
battalions. Yes. There were a few oddities in the battalion, but 1,300 wiped out, and what I don't know, after we had to go back into the village. And it stank, and it was wet. And of course, the conditions had to be absolutely favourable to the Germans. And they said that 4,000 gas shells had come over. And where they were living, I don't know. There may not have been, can't have been any proof things. But of course, with that, everybody was scared of gas. And they sent us an expert, and they sent us impregnated blankets. And they were to stop gas getting into a lot of ground plates, where the wooden slope and the thing would lie absolutely tight. And we fixed everything up. Everybody felt quite confident about it. It didn't worry us when we were doing this. And when we got it done, we got 5,000 shells over one, gas shells over one night. And I didn't wake the colonel. We were quite happy. So we were chatting down below and counting the shells and thinking that the air's all right. And we knew exactly what to do. As soon as air became difficult, we put on our gas mask and walk out into the wind. And in fact, it wasn't any worry at all because the wind blew it away.
So you don't understand how this had happened to the previous battalion?
I don't know. The conditions were wet and they hadn't got impregnated, nor had we at that time, impregnated blankets. They were really sick.
So you only got them after that had happened to them?
Yes.
And before this 5,000?
And what kind of gas it was, I don't know. But it was the only gas casualties I came across. I mean, I had a lot of gas at Ypres, but...
Could you tell the different types of gas? I mean, we're familiar with...
Well, I couldn't say. I mean, mustard gas once spilled, and I got sprayed with tear gas, literally sprayed with a liquid, and that comes,
that
I think.
Comes right. So what happened next, then? I think probably best.
The next thing that happened... Falkenvillers. Well, the sun is getting on now. We were in Doulon with Plume.
Where, sorry? Doulon.
Doulens, I think. It was a fair town.
What were you doing there?
Pioneering somewhere out in the country. And flu came. The doctor didn't send anybody to hospital. He ran a hospital himself with 70 people in it or something. And the other amusing thing there was the headquarters was in fact had a red light hung out. Each night there was some girl upstairs, an occasional person came in to, but we didn't move. And then I had as adjutant then a number of secret papers in the way that I hadn't read, but they just sort of document X and that sort of thing. And one morning I got a telegram saying document X, time 0 hour 12 or something. Opened the thing, found we'd got to get in a train, a whole battalion that time, go down and stop the last German attack of the war. Well, they didn't know it was the last, but it got nearer Paris than any other. Right down near Reims, R-H-E-I-M-S. And we, the doctor sent two people to the hospital, all the others came with us.
Did you get it at that time, yourself, flu?
I didn't get flu. No, I only got a cold once, and that's to come. They took us 5 days to get there, the train round Paris. So as we had rations somehow on the train, and just sat back in a carriage and ate and drank as it came in. It was, we couldn't do anything. When we got there, it was really tricky because the French maps were terrible, and we had very few of them. It was very wooded, and I can't remember things in detail. But I was terribly busy, and did happen, touch wood, to get things more or less right, as far as I knew. A new colonel didn't know much about it, or nobody did. Country, open country, and not open country, sorry, a lot of woods, but a different type of country with virtually no maps. And I remember walking through going up to the front, as far as we knew it, through a vineyard with a label on, and I've remembered the name till now. And every time I see a champagne list, I look it up. It's got to be a good list, because the last one I saw a few years ago was £54 a bottle. You can't pay more than 20 in Clifton for a bottle of champagne, so it was something super stuff. And in a list, I would pick it out at once.
What was it?
Labeled, I can't remember the means, double name. We zoomed out in woods, and the next clear memory is we had to, we were sitting in reserve when they attached to a brigade, which one of the divisional troops, and there was an attack going on ahead of us, and one of our people was wounded, and he kicked up a bit of a fuss. And the next thing we knew, about a day later, we had to follow guides up to do an attack. It was all nicely written down, square, and there was a wood we hit, a clear objective, we had a barrage, and there was a bulge on the left, and one of the battalions that had attacked and had a lot of casualties going to take the bulge. And we walked along, column of fours, with a guide in front, somewhere up some other hill, and through roughly wooded thing, to the edge of open ground in front, the woods there and woods there. And the guide said, you can't go any further than this, the Germans are here. There was no battalion there. People, and that was at least 1,000 yards short of our starting point. And so we telephoned, and the brigadier said, you've got to attack, to the Colonel Crouch, and he wasn't strong enough, and he hadn't got a VC, and the auto said, they won't do it. Quite clear what Bradford had said, at least it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and it didn't matter whether it was 10 or 12. If we had to attack, we ought to have scouted about, we ought to have postponed the barrage and got it altered, and just not done it. I mean, there was nobody there, really, on the words of probably of a corporal or something that was guiding us there. And they had to attack, and we did attack, and within half an hour or so, at least our headquarters were just about where we got the orders, and I suppose the telephone. I reckoned from watching Calvin back, we had about 200 casualties before we stopped.
Exactly was that? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
What date it was?
No, I don't know. There was no battalion appeared to attack with us, and that was another reason for not doing it, or postponing the order, or cancelling it. And they didn't even cancel the barrage. So it went on miles away. I reckon there were about 200 casualties, and then our people stopped because they couldn't. They were, in fact, as I found out, when the colonel went to find out, He came back with the company commander under arrest, because the men were just about to shoot him. He wasn't trying. Probably hadn't listened to orders, and he had an MC, and he had had Colonel's pips up.
Do you know his name?
No, I can't remember. But I'd better not, anyway. The only way we could get rid of him was months later, given more money to be a town major in a safe area.
You mentioned him before.
Yes.
His men were going to shoot him because he just wasn't making any...
Well, he attempted. And I think somehow he must have got them into trouble by walking on the machine guns. But I gathered from Crouch that they'd been to use their rifle as a sort of club to remove the brushwood, or you couldn't walk through the wood. And wood fighting is something terribly difficult. I believe the only way to do it is to put a few men every 50 yards in the side, go round it. Which means you can't use a rifle grenade, can't use mortars, you can't do any of the ordinary things. And then the next thing that happened was we'd stopped. And
had the attack been a failure then overall, would you say?
Yes. We got nowhere in particular. And then noticed something. I noticed it, it's a thing about. A bit of a sort of noise out to the right, and watched. And it turned out to be the battalion, or the remnants of the battalion, that was first to have attacked with us at 10 in the morning. Here it was, 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and they were attacking us. And out came sections, and they were evoking fire. And a second, I rushed out and shouted at them. They stopped, and they collected themselves together and marched away, and the colonel came and lay down somewhere near me for a whole hour without speaking, and then filed off. But it isn't efficiency of the division. And of course, if we'd made a real fuss about that, reporting their position wrong or being driven back, not being there for us to go through them, and so on, and this bloke arriving completely wrong, that may, goodness knows whose fault that was, because the maps were hopeless, we wouldn't have had trouble again. Each time we're in action, we have the same sort of trouble.
Why was the colonel's speechless for them?
What?
You said the colonel didn't speak. Why? Was he just speechless, or...?
Yes. I think he felt beyond him. He'd had a lot of casualties the day before, probably, and made a fool of himself, or somebody made a fool of him. And it wasn't for me to tick him off, I didn't think.
Hang on, this was their colonel, not Crouch.
Yeah, not their colonel, leading the attack. Masses of medals on him.
So you'd actually have to go out and stop them?
Yes, I had to go out.
You'd have easily been killed.
Stop them, yes. I think we were relieved either that night or the next night. Moved somewhere in the wood. I knew a new guide took us somewhere. And I know I spent a whole night doing stupid correspondence that came up from order and clerks.
What sort of correspondence?
Well, nothing to do with getting on with the war. Just things that had built up. The more clerks you have, the more notes there are.
Was that the sort of thing that Bradford had thrown away?
No, I don't think so. He would have objected to it, I think. There was too much. But I did. I got everything cared. I had no sleep that night. And then the next day, we got a tragic order. We had to move to another place, get into position to do an attack at 1:30 in the morning. They had to be in position at 1:30. We were taken there by guides, and there was clearing of it in the wood, and then a steep slope down with a track on it, woods each side. And when about two companies had got into position, whether we were 10 minutes late or not, We may have been, I don't know, but it all was exactly 1:30. We were doing our job exactly. A complete sort of barrage came down, almost wiped out two companies.
Of your battalion?
Yeah. It was terribly serious. And how they knew, and if somebody had shown a light, one of our people, well, one gun might have spotted it, but a whole mass of guns. I mean, it was a sort of barrel.
And this was British guns?
Not British guns,
German,
no,
guns.
German guns.
Sorry.
They must have known that we were the order, I think, that we were to be there at 1:30. Gone to mass, they have a lot of guns ranged on it, as it really was a do. And, well, the wounded and so on came up and got treated and the danger of what happened to them.
You weren't actually under the barrage yourself, though?
No. I was in a place where a few shells landed, not many. And then when the last people, or more or less the last people, were coming up, Plummer, who'd got the MC and a very brave person, was one of them. And there were a lot of people standing on their heads with a state of shell shock.